Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way to learn about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined by the lovable Japanophile, Pete Donaldson. Pete, how the dickens are you?
I've been called lovable. I've been called something with file at the end, but I've not been called lovable Japanophile, and I'm having it, Chris. How are you doing, man? You all right?
I'm good. I'm a little bit... I've just had a big Domino's pizza. I thought, you know, pre-podcast prep, a lot of alliteration. Get a Domino's pizza in. Down a Domino's pizza. Oh, I probably will crash. Yeah, a few moments in, a few minutes in. But well, I think I'll be all right.
Is there a big culture of kind of delivery over there, like delivered foods? And I presume pizza is probably one of the only few things you can do.
Yeah, no, there isn't really. In fact, I mean, I only discovered Domino's about 2 or 3 months ago.
Right.
And in the winter, it's perfect because you don't want to go out after 6 p.m. because it's like a fridge, like a freezer outside. So if I'm lazy, you know, I just want to sit inside, stare at the wall, then I just need a Domino's pizza to go with it. So, Domino's is, it kind of fills that gap. There's nothing else out there that I know of here that can do that. That's where Domino's comes in. I have to eat Domino's.
Is it identical to the American or UK experience, or is there anything? Is there any Japanese flourishes? Are the delivery drivers a little bit more polite, a little bit more on time? I don't know.
It's obscenely quick. Like, it comes in like 20 minutes.
Jeez,
really fast.
That's amazing.
It's absurd, yeah. And they're very polite, yeah. I think they must be a bit fed up of me ordering by now, or really delighted by me ordering, because I do it so often. We're on a first name basis. But anyway, I'm a little bit shattered, though. I've just come back from Tokyo. I was filming with Natsuki.
The boys are back in town.
It's been, 2 months since I last saw him, so... It was quite an emotional get-together, wasn't really, but we went to the Kill Bill restaurant. You know this Kill Bill restaurant?
No, I don't. What's that about?
Well, like it was a restaurant that influenced the movie. Oh. Like, when they had the big fight. Have you seen Kill Bill?
Yes, yeah.
Of course you have. Who hasn't? But like, you know the big fight with the crazy 88?
Yes.
She like goes into a restaurant, then 88 blokes with swords come out. It's that one. That's where it's kind of set or based on. Yeah. A tourist trap, but...
Right.
If you like Kill Bill, definitely go. If you don't like Kill Bill, it's not worth it. The food is a little bit pricey, and it is a bit of a tourist trap, so, yeah. But only go if you like the film.
You didn't see, like... were they called the 567s or something? That band, that girl band who played as the fight went on.
That one, yeah. Yeah, I kept humming it while I was in there. I was like, I was expecting it to come on at some point. And I went there, and when we went there, Natsuki had his katana sword and an eye mask like one of the crazy 88. And he walked in with his bloody plastic katana and was waving it around like a Muppet. And all the staff were just looking at him like, who are you and what are you doing here? So that was the closest we got to Kill Bill.
They must have seen that sort of thing before, surely. They must have seen a man walking in with a big sword.
It's not exactly original, is it?
I guess not.
I did film it, so there'll be a video about that coming out soon.
Beautiful. How is the great man? How is Natsuki? Is he still smoking 50 a day?
He smokes an obscene amount of cigarettes still, but I nearly killed him, actually, because the main thing we went to Tokyo to do was the Monster Gyoza Challenge. I don't know if you've seen this. Have you seen the Monster Gyoza thing?
You sent me a picture of this obscenely large. It looks like it looks like a throw pillow. It's like a big gyoza that's about as big as a giant's fingernail.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know what gyoza is, it's like a kind of, I don't know, it's like diced pork, minced pork, put in a little bit of batter, and it's about the size of a slice of orange, or an orange wedge, I guess. Is that a good description? I don't know. But anyway, this monster gyoza was the equivalent of about 150 gyoza. It is the size of a very big child's birthday cake, and it costs 9,800 yen each. So he spent like $200 on bloody two massive gyozas. And you have 1 hour to eat it. There's a few rules in place. You have 1 hour to eat it. If you finish it, the gyoza's free. I've watched a few videos about it, and I don't think I've ever seen anyone finish it.
Right.
But I thought, well, we'll give it a shot. It's kind of the spiritual sequel to our Monster Ramen challenge we did a few years ago.
Mm.
And there's another rule on there, though, that worried me a fair bit. And it's in red. All the rules are in black, and there's just one rule in red. And it's, if you are sick while you eat the gyoza, while you're eating and doing the challenge, if you're sick everywhere, you have to pay $300 and clean up your own sick. How awful is that?
If I was running a reputable establishment, I would not want patrons cleaning up their own sick, because when I've just been sick, I'm not exactly diligent. That's all I'm saying. Especially if I've eaten a monster gyoza.
And I don't want to spoil it, but Natsuki was sick. Not in there, thank God. That would have been, well, actually, that would have been quite a good video. But No, he was sick afterwards. About half an hour afterwards, he ran to the toilet and, poor Natsuki. To be fair, he did eat quite a lot of gyoza. I won't spoil who won or who ate the most, but we both ate a fair bit. And it wasn't a fun memory. Like, the batter on the gyoza was like the size of a cake pastry thing. It was like about 5 inches thick, the batter.
Right.
It felt really wrong. It felt perverse.
Well, I guess gyoza, kind of, when you fry it, it becomes crispy by virtue of the fact it's actually quite a thin membrane.
Yeah.
But once it gets scaled up, I suppose, it's actually quite stodgy. It's just like eating a load of flour and water.
basically. And it's horrible. It was the least exciting, the least favourite food challenge I've ever done.
No,
and I don't want to do it again. Even thinking about it makes me feel kind of nauseous. We both felt awful by the end of it, and I'm still kind of recovering from it all, to be honest, 48 hours later. We had a nice time, and we filmed quite a few videos, but that was the standout video. But we do have White Day coming up, Pete, as you know. So our first video, we talked about Valentine's Day. I thought the word wouldn't come to me then. Valentine's Day. So this week, coming up, we've got White Day. It's already happened by the time of this recording.
So what we talked about last time was Valentine's Day being the time when women give presents and chocolates to men, and then White Day is a month later, aka now, because we are celebrating our month anniversary of this show, the Abroad Japan podcast, tell your friends. So now the reverse happens. The boys have to give stuff to the girls.
That's right. I don't want to dwell on it too much because we've already covered Valentine's Day. We don't want to do a whole other episode on Valentine's Day times two. But I actually asked Natsuki for some advice on what guys should give to girls.
Oh, holy moly.
So here's what Natsuki had to say. Three items that he recommends giving to girls on White Day.
Wow.
So I'm here with Natsuki. Hello, Natsuki.
Hello, everyone.
And we're going to ask him for some advice on what to give on White Day. Romantic gifts to give on White Day. So, Natsuki, what are your three recommended items of things to give on White Day?
Chicken.
Chicken? Mm. Chicken? What? Do you mean food or the animal?
Food.
Oh, food. Okay.
Double chicken,
yeah. Because one portion of chicken simply isn't enough for White Day.
Cheap.
What kind of chicken? Fried chicken? Boiled chicken?
KFC style.
KFC style chicken.
Yeah, fried.
Wow. All right, number two. The second thing you recommend.
And socks.
Socks. Why?
絶対必要.
Socks are necessary.
Socks are important.
Socks are important, yeah.
In the house, in the room.
And have you ever given socks to a girl?
No.
No, right. Mm. Another questionable item. And a third thing on your list, a third thing you would give on White Day.
Chopsticks.
Yeah. Chopsticks.
Very rare.
Very rare chopsticks.
Not important, but not very rare.
Not important, but very rare.
Wow. It's chopstick on double style.
Right.
Love is double. Chopsticks are romantic.
Chopsticks are romantic because there's two, right?
Two.
Two chopsticks, two people, a chopstick each.
Each. Each there.
All right, thank you, Datsuki. Thank you for your hit list. Chicken, socks and chopsticks. The big three things to give on White Day. A questionable list, nonetheless. But thank you, Natsuki.
Thank you, thank romantic you man.
So there you have it, Pete. Chicken, chicken, socks and chopsticks. The big three things to give on White Day. Not candy, not chocolates. Chicken, socks and chopsticks.
Chris, I mean, he is a married man, so, and we're not.
He is.
So, I mean, he's probably got it right. Yeah, exactly. He's probably got it right, to be honest. So, well done. Well done, Natsuki, for that fine little bit of Valentine's Day fun there.
While we're on the subject of like White Day and romance, I thought this week we would cover love hotel culture.
Yes.
The mystery of love hotels, the magic of love hotels.
Mm.
Have you ever had any experience with love hotels while you've been in Japan?
No, though I have always stayed in the Love Hotel district of Shibuya, and the first time I went, I walked around and I was confused as to why these hotels were so colourful and had so many different styles and things like that.
And absurd names.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absurd names, why you were able to go in there for an hour at a time. So you're probably best off kind of explaining the Love Hotel to people who aren't really familiar.
So I was actually in Shibuya Love Hotel District yesterday. Not for love. I actually got lost because it's such a big district and they all look the same. They've all got silly names like Hotel Mickey Cookies. I think that's my favourite Love Hotel name. Someone thought, let's combine Mickey with cookies. But no, Love Hotels... So a lot of families live in intergenerational households in Japan. So you've got the grandparents live with the parents, the kids live with the parents, the kids of the kids live with the... Everyone basically lives in a big bloody house. So the walls are quite thin, and already you can probably see the problem emerging. So they've got these love hotels that have been going, I think, since the 50s or 60s. And the idea is you can pay either hourly or pay for, like, the whole night. So I think 2 hours typically costs about 4,000 yen, which is about $40 or £25 for 2 hours in a love hotel where you can relax and do love.
Put a love on someone.
I don't have to tick the explicit box on iTunes for this one, so I'll be careful what I say. And if you pay for the night, if you pay for like 12 hours, you're looking at about $100 or 10,000 yen. So it's a little bit cheaper than a hotel, but, and here's the best thing, the rooms are absolutely huge, and they're a lot more fun than standard hotel rooms. They're obviously soundproofed, because, again, I don't want to have to tick the explicit box on iTunes, but yes, use your imagination, everyone. So they have kind of weird, crazy things in there. I've featured a few videos before, and the first video I did, I've done two videos now on Love Hotels. The first one, I got locked in a cage in the room. It was themed like a torture chamber, which is exactly the kind of place you want to be when having a romantic few hours. And then the second video I did, I think about 2 years ago now, we had a teddy bear cave, amongst other things, and a room themed like a cinema. But you get all kinds of stuff. You get hot tubs, you get saunas, you get karaoke, you get arcade games. Like, it's so much fun to be had in a love hotel. You can just go in there with friends. If you're coming to Japan for 2 or 3 weeks... Like, I would actually put it on your list of things to do, because you could have some real fun in there.
And also,
you should definitely try it, Pete.
And also, exactly, that's one of the things I've never tried. We spoke about the Nakagin Capsule Hotel, we talked about the fact I've never used a capsule hotel. I think, for my kind of style of doing things, in that I'm always jet-lagged, I'm always a little bit hungover when I'm in Japan, so I think a little siesta in the afternoon would sort me out something chronic. Just pop in, have a little snooze in a crazy world, and then come back out again.
Exactly. I know. I think I've heard of quite a few businessmen like using it on I mean, I've thought about doing it quite a lot when I'm kind of tired in the afternoon. I want somewhere to nap. I've actually thought about doing it, but it just feels a bit It just feels a bit weird, a bit awkward to do that. Just going into a capsule hotel alone and just sort of laying there for 2 hours in like a dungeon with a cage next to me and all sorts of weird crap.
You feel like you're not making the most of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a weird thing. I thought about taking a friend in there once who came to visit, my friend Dave, and we were going to go in there. But they actually don't let you go in if you're the same sex sometimes.
We weren't
allowed in to, I think, two or three. We went in two or three love hotels, and they were like, no two boys. And I was like, oh, all right.
Wow.
So,
yeah, I mean, I guess...
I don't know why that is, actually.
Well, I just the slightly antiquated society, possibly, or just, you know,
bit
just
behind,
strange rules.
Yeah, times, perhaps.
I remember going to Nichome, which is a legendary gay district of Shinjuku, on my first trip to Japan.
Yes.
And there was, due to, a very antiquated anti-prostitution law from the 1920s, a lot of nightclubs and bars, you weren't allowed to dance in them. There was a guy DJing, and there, police would come round and bust places that had people dancing in them. So there was this hilarious image of being in a gay club. And you have, you know, ideas about gay clubs are fun, everyone's dancing, everyone's drinking, everyone's having a great time. They're the best. If you ever got like a new city, they're the best place to be. If you're straight, if you're hetero, and you're on the lookout for someone, another sex, I mean, obviously it's not the greatest idea, but if you're just out to have a bloody laugh and just to dance about and just to have the most amount of fun, go to the gay district because it's just 10 times more fun. Everyone's friendlier. Well, there's no bullshit. There's no ego. But Nichome, which is really interesting, like just standing in a bar while a DJ played Lady Gaga, no one's dancing. It's so weird. It was such a weird experience.
It was wrong. Everyone has to dance to Lady Gaga.
I know.
But,
romance.
I actually, on my first night ever in Japan, my friends took me to Nichome and we went to a gay bar. Actually, and we went in, and there was a guy who was really drunk, and he was so drunk he was getting off with the mirror.
Nice.
And we were like, "What are you doing?" He was licking the mirror, and one of my friends went over. I'm like, "What are you doing, mate?" And he was like, "Oh, I thought it was someone else." He was so drunk he thought the mirror was somebody else.
I mean,
how ridiculous is that?
He's got a type, like, and I love that about that man.
that kind of put me off Nichome a little bit, but I think it was just that guy. I shouldn't judge the whole of that district in Shinjuku by that one man.
Licking a mirror.
But love hotels, as well as being kind of good, they're also a little bit scary, and a little bit intimidating. For example,
yes.
You actually get locked in the room. You probably don't know this, but you get locked in the room. So you go in the room, and they seal the door after you. And if you're staying there like 8 or 9 hours, whatever, they won't open it until your time's up. And you have to ring the check at the desk can be like, can we go now? Or you have to wait until you've paid. So often the payment machines are located in the room itself.
Right.
So you go in and you'll like pay with your credit card in a little like ATM style booth that's built into the wall of the love hotel. And it's pretty scary. The idea of not being able to escape the love hotel or escape your room can lead to some pretty kind of scary situations. But I did it. One time I went there with a girl just because we wanted to sit in a room.
Legit. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. We went in the room anyway, and she went in the shower, and I was like, oh, I'll pay while you go in the shower and whatnot. So she went in the shower, and I started paying at the little payment system behind the door. The door was shut. We couldn't get out. That was that. And I got my credit card out and put it in, and it was like, credit card rejected. And I was like, oh, you fucking, you what? So I tried another card, and it was like, credit card rejected. And I was like, you fucking kidding. So I had no money on me. I had like 1,000 yen, and it was about 8,000 yen for the night. And by this point, I was just sticking in every card I could, like my driver's license, everything, because I was panicking. I was terrified. So I was sticking all these cards in. This was my first year in Japan, so I couldn't really speak any Japanese. I didn't know what to do. And so I rang up the desk, and I was like, my card isn't working. Card is broken. And this woman kind of was sent up. They opened the door, and there's this really angry woman looking there, like just sort of standing there. And she was like, credit card, please. And like she looked at it, and she was like, no, not this credit card. And I was like, oh, my God. And she was like, cash. And I was like, no, I don't have any cash. And she looked at me with this shocked expression. She was like, get out now. And I was like, what? And like I had to go back into the room where the girl was still in the shower and be like, oh, And she was like, yeah, yeah, come on in. And I was like, well, there's a bit of a problem. We actually have to go now because I have no money and no cards. And I don't think she did either. So she had to, like, hastily get dry, throw her clothes on, and we were kind of escorted from the building. It was one of the most humiliating memories I have from all my time in Japan.
Chris, that is an obscene story. That's so not obscene because of the things you wanted to do. It's obscene because the things you couldn't do and the situation.
I just want to do karaoke.
Yeah, of course. And just being told that you have to leave immediately
You should have seen the woman's expression. She was livid.
Especially because love hotels are famous for, because, again, the reasons why they exist are the reasons that you've just given, but the situation dictates that when you are giving over money or when you're actually going into the place, you never actually speak to anybody, or if there is an actual serving person, it's behind a wall, basically. You don't really ever see anyone.
That's right. So you go in, there's usually like a curtain when you go in, and you go in, and then... There is a check-in desk, but there's no one there. You don't see anyone. There's a few like cameras. You can often hear the rustle of papers and noises in the back room. But you have a series of screens, like TV screens, with pictures of each kind of room on there. So you've got like some exquisite rooms, some cheap rooms. You can see what themes the rooms are, and then they have the price underneath as well. And then you kind of press a button for the room, and then you just go in the lift. The lift will open, up you go. Some are a little bit different. Sometimes you do meet the staff in there, but rather than... You can't see their face. There's just a little tiny... a little tiny hole in the wall where they kind of... You can just kind of hear them, and they can hear you. That's about it.
That's like...
So it is a kind of really creepy system.
It's like Alien. They're in the walls. They're always in the walls.
In the walls of the Love Hotel. And so... Yeah, I mean, yeah. The first few times I did it, I was very intimidated by it all. But now, you know, it's not at all. The whole system's pretty simple. And what I found is love hotels in Japan have kind of changed. They're becoming more open to the idea of foreign tourists. Before, I think the first time I used one back in 2013, I think it was then, I don't think they were really, like, welcoming to foreigners. Mm. I think they kind of... Like, I mean, the woman was probably angry at me because I didn't pay the hotel, to be fair, rather than being foreign.
That was her major problem, to be honest.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
She wasn't racist against you, she was racist against your credit card, which is a problem.
Racist against my wallet. But these days, if you go on, like, booking.com or hotels.com or whatever, you'll find that you can actually book the Love Hotel on the website. Mm. And you can never do that before. Love Hotels, you can't reserve a room. You have to turn up there. And it's kind of, you know, first come, first serve. Now you can actually do it on the internet. And it's this idea that Love Hotels are trying to boost their money, boost their profits by kind of welcoming tourists.
Well, whenever you sort of walk past one, it's always very quiet. There's never anybody coming in or out. I remember sort of booking one weirdly on hotels.com in Korea. They have a very small amount of them in Korea, and I booked one there just because it was cheaper than every other hotel. Yeah. The best thing about it, it had two gaming PCs in there. Two gaming quality PCs in there. No idea why.
Did they have any games?
No, it did have a colossal amount of European strength pornography on it, though. I don't know why.
Oh, my Lord. Why would you need a quality, like a PC gaming quality PC for that? Gaming quality. A gaming... Oh, my God. Since that Domino's pizza kicking in already, isn't it?
Yes, get in there. All that lovely cheese.
I'm so stuffed. I don't know why I've done this. Why have I eaten Domino's before a podcast? What an idiot. But I had a really horrible... The last time I used a Love Hotel must have been, I don't know, I can't remember what it was, but it was a horrible memory, and it put me off Love Hotels altogether.
What?
It was in Shibuya, actually. It was in Shibuya, the Love Hotel district, the massive one we discussed earlier. If you are in Tokyo, the top two Love Hotel districts are in Shibuya and Shinjuku. Shinjuku, if you're a listener, or Pete, if you want to do it, Pete, if you want to relax in a Love Hotel. I went to Shibuya and we checked in, and I had a shower in the evening, kind of nice pre going to sleep shower, and I saw a cockroach in the hot tub. There was a hot tub in this room. It's quite a big room, but it felt quite old and dusty and smoky. It wasn't very pleasant. And I saw a cockroach in the bath, and I was like, oh, shit. That's never a good thing. I hate cockroaches. They scare the hell out of me. But I didn't tell the person I was with, I didn't tell them about the cockroach. I was like, they won't be able to sleep if they know it's in the bathroom. So I won't tell them.
What a hero.
Anyway, a hero, definitely. the cockroach kind of scuttled away down the drain. So I was like, well, probably the last we've seen that little rascal anyway. And then we went to sleep, and the next morning woke up about 7, 8 a.m. And I had another shower, because I always start my day with a shower. I love showers. Showers are brilliant. Mm. Lots of showers. And I went in the shower, and I heard an ear-piercing scream from the person I was with. And I like went out the shower, and they were standing out of the bed, and they pointed, and the cockroach was on the pillow that had been where my head had been. And I was like, are you kidding? I've literally slept with a cockroach by my face. And I was absolutely disgusted by this. So that put me off Love Hotels. But don't let that stand in the way of you going to a Love Hotel.
No.
Don't let that stop you. It was only that time.
It's a feature, if anything. Maybe if your credit card doesn't work, maybe the cockroach has a credit card you could use instead. I once worked at a zoo for a year, Chris, and we had hissing cockroaches.
You worked at a zoo?
I worked in a zoo for an entire year at wow. university. I was there to make a CD-ROM, something you probably don't even remember existing. But it
if
was.
There was a list of top five things I wouldn't expect someone to do at a zoo. That'd be like number one or two. Making a CD-ROM at a zoo?
Yeah, I was supposed to be doing that, and instead I just spent all of my time just hanging out with the gibbons, and I, you know, started my my lifelong love affair with gibbons. Oh, man, I love gibbons. But we used to have, in the education centre, we used to have hissing cockroaches that if you touched them, they would go... which is spooky.
I don't know what I'm laughing at more, the idea of you making a CD-ROM, the idea of you with the gibbons, or... the fact you just pronounced cockroach is conkroach.
Conkroach. Conkroaches encroaching on your pillow.
Pete in the zoo.
Incredible.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania. Too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Are you a YouTuber?
Wow.
So, last week we started something very special, and I think very useful as well, because when it comes to learning Japanese, when it comes to learning any language, I think it's always kind of hard. You always get taught the basics. You get taught the Ohayo gozaimasu's and the sumimasen's, but you don't get to learn anything more advanced than that until you get over a particular kind of speed bump, I think it's fair to say. So it's quite nice with these shows, because they are themed around a central theme, we can sort of, or you can rather, give us some vocabulary that might be useful.
Speedy Japanese lesson.
Exactly, in love. Like love-based vocabulary.
Yes, so the theme this week's been love. It makes sense to do some love vocabulary. Now, you know a little bit of vocabulary, so I kind of see these segments as me just testing you on your Japanese, basically.
Yes, yeah.
So what I'll do is I'll give you some words in English, and you tell me what they are in Japanese.
Okay.
All right, so let's dive into the verb for love. How do you say I love you? How do you say love in Japanese?
Well, as discussed on a previous episode, I am reprehensibly ugly to any Japanese women, so I've never had the opportunity to use this. In fact, I can't.
The Gibbons love you, don't worry about it.
Oh, man, I love those Gibbons. I don't know to love. I know to like, right, but I don't know to love, Chris.
What's to like?
Daisuki.
Good. So that you could use that in the same way, actually. You could say that, like, oh, daisuki, as in the way it kind of, to mean love, but not in a very deep way. It's the sort of thing you'd say to someone you've been dating for, like, a few weeks or something, you know. You kind of just say, oh, by the way, you know, anata daisuki, kimi wa daisuki. But the real kind of, the big verb, the one to go for if you're actually genuinely in love, is aisuru, or aishiteru.
Aishiteru. Oh, anata.
You whisper that into your wife's ears.
Anata wa aishiteru.
Don't make the classic mistake. In Japanese, you don't actually ever use anata wa. You don't use anata. It's kind of rude. There's an expectation. You should always know the person's name. And so when people go, Chris, how's my Japanese? Anata ga daisuki, or send me a message with the word anata. It's kind of the giveaway that their Japanese isn't necessarily that good, because you just don't use it.
I see. So, I see. Yeah. Or rather, ashteru. I always sort of remember, so anata wa, anata wa, I always remember that's about someone else, because it reminds me of the word another. Another, anata, anata wa, another person, basically. But people anata don't use it, turns out. And that's the weird thing about Japanese. You get taught all these kind of very formal setups and formal rules and formal vocabulary. But when you actually get there, nobody bloody uses it. It's very upsetting.
It's true. I mean, you kind of just admit, if you don't know the person's name, for example, obviously I do know your name, so it's like Peter Daisuki, you know, Peter-san Daisuki.
Oh.
But if I didn't know your name, I wouldn't say anata, I just wouldn't say it. I'd just talk to you, I would just drop the subject altogether.
Yeah, okay.
And just say, like, oh, Daisuki. You know, you wouldn't tell someone whose name you didn't know that you loved them. That would be the sort of thing you would do if you're fantastically drunk. That's the only time I can envision that happening. Alright, let's take to the next level. What about head over heels in love?
Head over heels in love? No, not a clue.
Well, yeah, it's rabu rabu.
Rabu rabu.
Yeah, so for example, when I told my Japanese friend I had a girlfriend or whatever, they would be like, oh, rubber rubber this guy, rubber rubber, is it, are you head over heels, you know. It's kind of a tongue-in-cheek
right.
way of saying it, you know. Is it, is it love love?
Oh, love, that's love. Lovely. Is it love, love?
Yeah, easy well, to remember as well.
Yeah,
it sounds
exactly.
Like love.
Rabu, rabu. Yeah, I guess. is that how it started? Rabu, rabu. Is it like shabu, shabu? Isn't that the? isn't that meat in water or something?
yeah. Shabu, shabu. It's where you dip the meat in the water to cook it, to boil it. Yeah.
So rabu, rabu, so, shabu, rabu, shabu,
shabu, shabu, shabu, shabu, shabu, rabu, rabu. What about to kiss?
Oh,
to kiss.
If I was going to bet, I reckon it's probably a borrowed word.
Good.
So just and with every borrowed word, just add a U on it. Kisu. Kisu. Kisu.
Kisu.
Kisu. Kisu. Kisu.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's kisu.
Right.
Kisu.
What does the suru part? Is that like a doing word? Is that like
so
to
suru
do?
Suru turns it into a verb, basically.
Right.
Kisu
okay.
is the noun, and suru whack that on the back, and it's a magically becomes a verb.
Ah, like
kisushimashita.
Like if you want to play, kissed. Like if you want to play baseball or soccer, sakoshimasu,
yeah,
similar sort of thing, I guess.
Or if you want to say kiss, I want to kiss you. You know, kisushitai. I want to kiss you.
Yeah, because if you notice words that have tai on them, it's kind of like an intent thing. I want to do something, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Right, okay.
Good. And the last word, big one. So if things go well, if it is rabu rabu,
yeah.
if you do kiss a shtai, if you do kiss, you do have love love. What's to marry?
Oh, not a clue.
Not a clue. Kekon.
Kekon
suru.
Kekon suru.
Kekon suru. Kekon shtai.
Kekonstein,
I want to get married.
Ah,
yes.
So Kekon,
you hear that quite
married.
A lot, actually.
Right.
Well, often when I was teaching, the students would be like, "Kurisu, kekon suru? Will you get married?" Or "Kekon shimashita? Kekon shiteru? Are you married?" And I was like, "No, don't want to get married." And they'd be like, and I'd be like, "No, children, marriage is rubbish." not speaking from experience, just me being pessimistic.
Yeah.
But they were shocked by this idea that I didn't want to get married. Even though I was single as well, I was like, no. But kekon suru.
Ah.
How would you remember that word? What would you use in your arsenal of creative genius to memorise that word?
Well, kek, isn't kek an online kind of online term for laughing? So to laugh is to kek. So kekon.
What country is this word from?
It's mainly 4chan, kek. To be honest. It's mainly the horrible parts of the internet. They use kek as a kind of like really laughy kind of thing. I think that's the case anyway. I'm a man a little bit older than you, Chris, and I haven't got a clue of what's going on the internet. I'm just like, oh, what's this now? It's like lifting up a rock most weeks.
Ridiculous, man. All right, let's do a quick recap of the words then. So what's the verb to love?
Aisuru or aishiteru.
Good, good. Aishiteru means like I love you, present tense. Head over heels?
Rabu, rabu.
Yeah, easy, isn't it? Just imagine like rub, the word rub. rabu, rabu.
All dirty boy with his little cockroach in his love hotel.
God. A kiss, is that even worth testing? It's so easy to kiss.
Yeah, kiss the suru.
What about I want to kiss?
Kisu shitai or shitai?
Shitai, yeah, good. Kisu shitai.
Shitai, is it S-H-T-A-I? Shitai?
Yes.
Right, okay.
Yeah, shitai, good.
Shitai.
And to marry?
Kekon shitai, I want to marry you, Chris.
That's a terrifying thought, but good, well done.
Not too bad.
That is your speedy Japanese lesson of the week.
Yay! Woo-hoo. Thanks, Chris.
By episode 10, you'll be basically fluent, except you won't be.
Oh, wow. Shall we move on to a little bit of wacky news of the week or emails? It's completely up to you, because you are my husband, Chris.
Oh, God. All right, let's dive into wacky news of the week before picture what that could entail.
Beautiful.
Right, wacky news of the week. So, I don't know if you've seen it. There's a big big kind of thing at the moment, big viral video.
Right.
About a few days ago. So, a YouTuber in Japan, who I happen to know, called Tikio-san, he had a viral video. He basically got a GoPro camera, went to a sushi restaurant with a conveyor belt sushi, and whacked the GoPro on a plate, and the plate is carried around the entire room, as you would expect, given its conveyor belt place. And it's just amazing, because you've got all these tables. There's about 10 tables that it goes past. About half the people see the camera, the other half don't. And you can kind of get a view into all these different like microcosms of life going on. So, for example, the second table, there's like an argument, like some sort of couple having kind of awkward, heated argument. Another table, there's just a bunch of lads who are like, "Whoa, camera!" Another table, there's a foreigner who is just shocked by this camera. So it's quite nice, just this camera just drifting slowly at about 5 miles per hour past all these people who kind of react to it. It's quite a good video.
Yeah,
and I spoke to him afterwards, and we were both find it quite ironic. You know, you can spend days and hours making really good videos with high production values, and then you just put a GoPro on a bloody plate and get 300,000 views in 12 hours.
Well, the thing about the whole so basically, he just gets a GoPro, puts it on the conveyor belt, and just goes around. But what I like about it is that it's actually quite a smooth tracking shot of the entire restaurant. And then at one point, the staff pick it up and take it to the back room and sort of look at it a little bit. I mean, I don't know how he got it back, but I mean, was he in cahoots with the people? I don't know, but
he definitely wasn't in cahoots. Like,
no.
So for the first 4 minutes, it goes around the track, and then suddenly the camera's picked off. It's like snatched off and taken into the kitchen. And like all the staff are looking into the lens like, "What is this thing? What's it doing?" And after another 2 minutes, the staff comes in, grabs it, takes it through the kitchen and hands it back to Sam, and comes full circle. So it's quite a nice video. So I definitely recommend checking it out. What's the video title on YouTube? You know,
it's Camera Goes on Japanese Sushi Conveyor Belt. Trouble? 3 exclamation marks.
Clickbait.
Clickbait, mate.
Good on him.
Clickbait.
Fair play to him. Good on Sam. Great video. Worth checking it out.
Yeah.
And makes me wonder why I put effort into my video. I'm tempted to just get a GoPro and do it. Like, I spoke to Sam about it after he did it, and I was like, how ironic is it? And I can relate to that with the whole North Korean missile video.
Yes.
You know, I made a 3-minute video of a bloody air raid siren going off in the middle of nowhere about a North Korean missile. And it ended up getting like 40 million views across Facebook and YouTube. So, and it was on my iPhone as well. So it's funny how these things happen. Just spontaneous kind of situations like that. Just, that's where it's at. So
the best...
The moral of the story is just do things with a GoPro camera.
Well, that's what they say.
Don't overthink it. Just do it.
Yeah. The thing they say is the best camera is the one you've got with you. I think it's fair to say. So just, you know, film everything and then you can edit it later, I suppose. What you should
film the Gibbons.
What you should do is stick a GoPro on like a tortoise and just let it go in the streets. Because I mean, the good thing about Japan is there's barely any crime.
And then speed it up and do like a time lapse.
Yeah, exactly. No one's gonna steal your camera because people are very respectful of other people's property. Stick a GPS locator on it and stuff, and then just find the tortoise later. See what nonsense he's gotten up to. People waving at it and stuff. Oh, beautiful.
Your talents are wasted at Absolute Radio.
I know, right?
Ramble. We should be off sticking cameras to tortoises.
I know, right?
Getting this channel off the ground. Dear, oh dear.
We've got some emails, Chris. Should we pile through a few? Because time is against us.
Go for it.
Lovely old job. These are all on the subject of capsule hotels. Turner Wright. Hello, Turner Wright. It was my second time using a love hotel the way it was intended. Steady. The first time we both stayed until our time was up, so I didn't notice anything amiss. I didn't even realise, like you said earlier, Chris, some love hotels lock you in.
Oh, where's this going?
I know. I had been living in Korea at the time. I was visiting Japan for a week to climb Mount Fuji, do some shopping. My last night in Fukuoka, nice. Beautiful place. I rented a capsule, took a bath, and went to hit the clubs in Tianjin. I met a perfectly nice young lady, and we went to a nearby love hotel.
Nice.
Wow. Perfectly nice. Perfectly serviceable lady. at this point, I should say I was catching the first ferry back from Fukuoka to Busan. On the fast boat, I think it's about 3 hours but on a ferry, it can take around about 6 to 7 hours. It didn't really matter to me if I didn't get any sleep because I'd have to wake up ridiculously early anyway. With that in mind, once our Love Hotel activities were finished, again, steady, I needed to leave for the ferry while she wanted to sleep. That's when I discovered I couldn't open the door from the inside. Oh, perhaps there was a latch or something I was missing. So what do you imagine I did? I called the front desk. I explained I was too stupid to open the door. No, wait. The room was not only on the lowest floor, but the building was designed in such a way that there was such a strong awning directly under our window leading to street level. So basically, what this person did was they jumped out of the window of the Love Hotel with the clothes still very much in disarray, walked over the awning and hoped it would handle my weight, and then took a final jump onto the street. Some guy was nearby smoking and didn't even react. Oh, Japan. So this man just broke out of his own Love
room,
Hotel.
Just go for the window. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
God, what an adventure.
Turner, right.
Climbing Mount Fuji, pulling girls and diving out of windows. The Turner Wright experience. Yeah. Well done, Turner. Good job. Bloody hell.
I mean, I imagine it's how Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney deals with situations. Just jumping out of windows and stuff. Wow. Oh, wow. Do you want to take one, Chris? Have you got them in front of you?
Yes. So yes. Stephen O'Mara says, my question is, when you guys talk about nightlife in Japan, it seems to be very drinking orientated. What do you think are some good night options for travellers who are living sober? I understand Japan's culture itself is a drinking culture, but was wondering if you guys had some good suggestions to have fun nights out for people who don't like to drink.
I mean, it's got to be bowling and darts and things like that, I suppose. I think you're forgetting that a lot of nightlife is very much based around food as well, and little snacks and, you know, eating food every couple of hours.
Go to a Love Hotel.
Go to a Love Hotel, no, lock yourself in, jump out the window.
You go to karaoke.
Yeah, exactly.
Steve says a lot of activities like karaoke don't necessarily have to be done drunk, but that seems to be the underlying attraction. I don't think so. I think a lot of people go to karaoke sober. I can't actually do karaoke sober. It feels a bit weird, but it's still doable. Go to the zoo, look at the gibbons. Gibbon. This whole podcast should just be about gibbons.
It almost sounds a bit Japanese, doesn't it? Gibbon. But I think if you're living as a sober person who doesn't drink, I mean, presumably you know how to deal with your own nightlife when you're not drinking. So I mean, there's enough stuff to do. Like, just have a stroll around, just enjoy yourself, and people will be drinking.
Just get some non-alcoholic beer.
Yes.
Like, I mean, go to an izakaya, go to a Japanese pub, go to a restaurant. Just get like non-alcoholic drinks and you'll be fine. It won't be awkward or weird. It'll be fine, trust me. Don't let not drinking sake get in the way of your trip.
Definitely. For every kind of beer, there's 10 kinds of oolong tea. So oolong tea's a big sort of deal when you're out and about, which surprised me. A lot of people, instead of a soft drink, a Coca-Cola or something, you can have something a little less aggressive, and oolong is just cold oolong over ice. Oh man, it's decent.
Or just go to a games arcade as well.
Yeah, that's another
dive
one.
Dive into a games arcade, yeah. I mean, that's what, like, a lot of friends, when they come over, we often just do Mario Kart at, like, the games arcades from, like, 7 p.m, 8 p.m. You can do it any time. So just go into a games arcade. They're often 24 hours anyway. So
yeah,
lots of options, Steve. Lots of options.
Definitely.
One more question from David there. Is there a Japanese equivalent of Chris Broad, a Japanese YouTuber living in the UK and making videos about their life there for a Japanese audience? The only person I know is my friend Chiaki. Just type in Chiaki into YouTube and it should come up. She's the only Japanese person I know in the UK who's making videos. But obviously they are aimed at Japanese people, so I don't know if they'll be up your street. But yeah, check them out, Chiaki. She's really awesome. She's a really nice person, so...
I'm going to find where she is and get in the background of one, just for you, Chris.
But she's a lot nicer than I am. Yeah, it seems wrong to call her the Japanese equivalent of me. It doesn't. Yeah, she's not. She's just a nice Japanese girl living in the UK.
She'd happily hang out with a cockroach. on a pillow, I imagine. So Chris, I guess we kind of have to get out of here. To be honest, we've had another bumper show. We've learned so much. We've had vocabulary lessons. We've learned about Turner Wright and his wild life. We've learned about Natsuki and the Monster Gibbons. Gyoza challenge. Do look out for those videos, by the way. It sounds fascinating. The Kill Bill restaurant one, and also the Monster Gyoza as well. Maybe
it should be out either when this podcast comes out or soon after.
So beautiful.
For them.
Cool. All right. Well, Chris, I think it's all we can really say is goodbye
to Domino's
and sorry.
Pizza. Yeah. Goodbye and sorry. Yes. Thanks for listening, guys. No matter where you might be in the world, thanks for listening. And we'll see you and hear you and listen and art. The Domino's Pizza is kicking in.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.